First of all, a little bit of ground rules. Thank you for the invitation. Some of you that know me know that I tell a lot of stories, and I actually use some cuss words every once in a while. Those will not happen today, but if they do, I'm just warning you to watch out. Pleasure to be here today, and we're going to try to keep the microphone. We're going to switch here. Okay, plan 7. I'm from the Livestock Marketing Center. Began in 1955. Four of our primary states that started the organization are represented here. So it's a pleasure to be here today. Colorado State University, University of Wyoming, University of Nebraska, and South Dakota State University. Work for all those organizations up there. Not a USDA employee. I would like to say at the beginning here that it's going to be an aggressive agenda. Aha, put your hand up here. So it's an aggressive agenda. You can read through there. Down at the bottom there, all these data sources are from the USDA. If you think people that make up these numbers and you believe that they did it, they didn't do it. You need to think about this a little bit, and I'm not going to give you a strong sales pitch, but markets take information to operate, and we've all been in a cattle market lately where we're struggling to try to figure out what's going on. And these USDA agencies are critical. Those of you that didn't fill out your information for NASS in recent years, please thank your neighbors that did, because that's why you got these big drought checks, because the industry relayed to USDA and the federal government people, who really don't care a lot about your industry, of the importance of what's gone on and when natural things happen. Also, the market data is very important. Then let's look at Foreign Ag Service. There's actually people overseas, and these federal other governments just don't provide data like ours do. It takes people to actually put these together so we know what's going to happen in China and these other places as we look at the long term of this industry. So with that, let's talk a little bit about the markets. And I'm going to have to switch over here periodically to see my slides. But the Fed cattle market, the blue line is this year, dotted line is last year, red line is the prior five-year average. And you asked for outlook, so we're just going to start with outlook. We've had a 20% unraveling in the Fed cattle market, and these are through last week. And then we had a rally up, and now we're going back down. Of course, the futures are up this morning after being limit down yesterday, so we can talk about that a little bit. This is a market that caught us off guard in the Fed cattle side, and we'll talk about some of those reasons for that unraveling, but it's critical. Obviously, the calf and yearling prices are being set here. We're still going to have the second highest Fed cattle market in history in the fourth quarter of this year. Fourth quarter of this year is going to be the second highest cattle market for Fed cattle, calves, and yearlings in history. 7 to 8 weight steers, same story, but we can see we haven't had, you know, quite the same pattern, and we're still setting the lows in the 7 to 8 weight marketplace. Those are the animals that are really struggling in some sense because of the cattle feeder red ink, and we'll come back to that. Calves, this is Southern Plains, but similar up here, similar across the region. Nebraska's a little bit higher. But we're testing it down. We're Oklahoma City this week. We're down about $5. But the unraveling seems to be behind us again. That doesn't mean it can't happen again. But we seem to have found some real support in this marketplace. Okay, so that's the markets. As we look ahead to the fourth quarter of this year, if I'm still sitting on some yearlings out there, I want to start to really worry because there's not much upside price potential. Calves, we can probably drag them into next year and not worry too much. The worst is behind us. Fed cattle, probably the worst is behind us, but this is a very volatile market until we get, you know, really into December. So we really don't have much longer to go, but you never know when we're at this time of year. Okay, so that's that story. Cull cow prices, if I'm sitting on cull cows today, and if I have a lot of forage, I might want to put a sharp pencil to this and look at some economics and plan on a seasonal price increase into the spring months, which we did not get last year. But obviously, we've unraveled those prices, and it's all tied together. So that's the markets. Let's talk about the outlook. Well, the top dotted line in blue is calf prices, including the forecast for this year. On an annual basis, 2015 is the peak of this cyclical price cycle. The fourth quarter is obviously lower, and we'll talk about that. Then we head down. So, you know, the second line is 7 to 8 weight steers, and the bottom line is fed cattle. So I have a real, you know, important economic term to relay to you how I'm describing these markets. And the calf market's a duckhead market. We've had the big top. Now we're on the bill part. We're going to go down, but it's going to go down probably slower. The 7 to 8 weight steers are a goosehead market, and the fed cattle are a hammerhead market, right? So Let's think about that. Again, we're at the second highest prices ever. This fall, you're selling your calves for the second highest price ever. And really, in 2014 and most of 2015, many things came together that got us these markets. We're looking at calf prices next year, the fall of 16. Could be flat with this fall, could be down $10 a hundredweight. In other words, we're not looking for this to repeat unless we have a shock. We had a market that I would describe as 1,000 little cuts. All these things really came together, a lot of factors, a whole host of them, and then we throw a fed cattle 20% price decline due to some real clear-cut reasons, and all of a sudden we've got a market unraveling. It's not a market, though, that you can just point at one thing and say, this is what got us in what we've had. This is also a market that we need to learn from. This is a market where we see unraveling markets in commodities all the time. And we need to learn in cow-calf country how to respond, and we'll talk about that, and in fed cattle country. So that's the outlook. The outlook is that we're in cyclically lower prices, probably at least through 2018, probably 2019. Many of you are still paying taxes on your income, though, so this is really – it feels really bad compared to last year. But last year was a bit of an anomaly. Again, second highest cattle market ever right now as we're facing this marketplace. Okay. So that's what I got on the outlook. We're done with that. Now what are we going to do? Who knows what Rob's going to do next? So now we're going to describe the reasons why and maybe the reasons not why. So when we think about markets overall, we're always talking about the supply and the demand side in the marketplace. The demand side is consumers. You all understand that those people do not care about your cost of production. And then you're on the supply side of the marketplace. And these are always interacting. Let's start with the demand side for a minute. First, we're going to take an educational moment. And we're going to talk about the macro economy. The U.S. economy is actually growing, although every report that you hear, 2 weeks ago we have a great unemployment report, and then we have a not-so-good consumer confidence report, and then we have a great consumer confidence report, and then everybody talking head says the federal government, Fed's going to raise interest rates, and that pushes the market. Actually, the economy in the U.S. is growing. And it's growing rather sustainably, even though it's growing at a pace that's less than we've had out of past recoveries. The red bars there are the past recession. The problem is that the rest of the world ain't doing this. The U.S. economy is growing. You know, Japan's in recession. Russia's in recession. China is growing at a pace about half, probably, in real world numbers that they have in recent years. That's a big adjustment. Europe's really not growing, you know. So we look around the world, and we are the engine of growth in this cyclical economic environment. So the U.S. is growing. Another educational moment. Per capita beef consumption is going down. Per capita beef consumption is not demand. Per capita beef consumption is literally about half of the demand profile. Because demand has two dimensions to an economist. Not only what people will eat, but the price at which they'll pay to consume that. And the price is really important because consumers are still paying very high prices for beef products, right? And so the demand profile. So let's take a true look at the demand profile, and we'll just look at the third quarter of this year. These are indexes of demand. For you young people in the audience in the 1980s and 90s, chicken industry whooped the heck out of the beef industry. And we sort of woke up as an industry. We started developing new products, caring about international trade, lots of different dimensions. And we got into that 92 index, and this is to an economist in the audience. These are positive and negative shifts in the demand function, whatever that is. But just look at the rate of change here. So that 92 was pretty good economic growth, and also Atkins diet era, all that. Then we kind of followed the U.S. economy. Let's look, jump ahead to the third quarter of this year. So we hear about the WHO report, right? Markets are going to crumble on Monday as soon as they open, and there's people talking heads saying, and what happened? Nothing. The WHO report has had nothing to do with this cattle market and how it's unfolded in recent weeks. 94, that's an index. That's better than the demand profile that we've had in years. The demand profile for your product, because consumers are paying record high prices, and we're always increasingly concerned about pork and chicken, and we'll come to that, but this is really good news. I mean, you can talk about vegetarians, right? Those terrible V people out there. Most of you have heard this story, right? There's vegans, there's vegetarians, there's Vulcans, right? They're all against you. But this demand profile is very solid. And you need to understand that. So that's really good news. The problem is that it's not everywhere. Let's also look at the what we call the drop, the byproduct value, the non-meat parts of this carcass. That's pretty much a wreck. On a live steer basis, that's $5 a hundredweight, fully lower than last year. $5 a hundredweight of this market in the last several months is because the hide, those internal organs, the liver, the kidney, and what are those dependent on? Those are dependent on export markets. Earlier this year, packers would squawk and squawk and squawk about their returns. And what they were squawking about wasn't the meat return, their meat side of the equation, it was the drop side of the equation. Again, this is the world economy interacting with our industry. Okay, so now let's talk about the other real dimension of demand. That was a segue here. Export demand for your product, right? The final products that you produce. Those are cattle on feed in the upper corner in Alberta, Canada, lower corner, cattle on feed in Via Mercedes, Argentina. Beef exports, the blue line, beef exports ain't very good. It's part of the puzzle why we've gotten to where we're at, but we've seen this coming for quite a while. Those beef exports are struggling. Again, we talked about the world essentially not growing at a significant pace and key customers actually in recession. Let's talk about it on an annual basis, though. So two bars from the right over there is our forecast for 15. Next bar from the right is forecast for 16 and then 2017. But 2015 doesn't look anything bad compared to several years ago when we had the BSE events. In 2016, we don't think we're going to get a lot of growth in this beef export marketplace. But 2017, I might want to be prepared. Okay? That's probably the timeline that we're on. We're not looking. But what's an important point here? We're not looking for a repeat of 2015 and 2016. So here's one thing that has shocked the market this year that probably we're not going to get this fall proportionally again. It's the change in these numbers that makes a difference, not the level. And we're probably not going to have another decline of that magnitude. In fact, we could be pleasantly surprised. The other side of the international trade equation is what we import. These imports on that big jump up bar are huge. As we stand back, though, for a minute, let's look at the forecast ahead for 16 and 17. Not a repeat of this story. Where did we get these imports? They mostly came from Australia. What is that product? That product is mostly big, huge, frozen cubes of lean beef that ends up 20% of McDonald's hamburgers and in toppings on pizzas, et cetera, right? It's been a big number. Why has it been a big number? A little bit the flip side of the export market. But here's the key factors. Number one, Australia's been in a drought, and the drought continues. You all have been through droughts probably, and you know that you liquidate animals in a drought. When the drought ends, you quit doing that. Number two, world economy, right? We talked about the slowdown. But some of their major markets have really slowed down. The oil countries, Southeast, the Middle East, Russia, China, et cetera. And so they're slowing down there. Number three is the U.S. is growing. And when their markets aren't growing, what happens? They shift around and it comes here. Number four. Four on the list in terms of priorities is exchange rates. Don't let people tell you this is all an exchange rate story. There's way more to it, including Russia. As Russia shut down to all the world's meat products, what happened? Well, Australia, Europe, everybody had to find a new marketplace. And the one that was growing was the US of A. Again, is this going to repeat in 2016 and 2017? Australia doesn't have the herd to keep doing this, right? The world economy probably picks up. Okay, and if I stand back and look at the world situation in 2 to 3 years, I'm not talking next week, I'm not talking next month, I want to be producing beef probably in a country that's going to capture growing incomes and growing exports. What two countries come to the top of that list? Brazil and the United States of America. No one else, if we get a positive rebound in export markets, is going to be set to play the game. Now let's talk about feedstuffs. What we're doing here is we're drifting through all the factors in these knife cuts that have got us to where we are today. Corn market. Corn market a couple years ago was $7 a bushel. We all understand there's a fundamental relationship between corn and feeder cattle and calf prices. At today's market, let's call it 220 on calves in the Southern Plains, a little optimistic. It's about it for every 10-cent change in corn per bushel up, 5 to 6 weight steers in the Southern Plains are going to drop by $1 per hundredweight. So we had a $4 drop per hundredweight a couple of years ago in the corn market. That gave us $40 to $50 on our calf market. Again, let's stand back and think about this. We're not going to get that again, but corn's probably not going to go higher again. And if it does, it's because of a drought. Ethanol is no longer driving the U.S. corn industry. It's now mature. So you're not going to have, if in a drought, you're the combined effects and impacts coming from the ethanol market to blow up our livestock markets. So this looks pretty benign. Let's move on. Let's talk about pork and chicken. Everything but beef has interacted here in this industry. We've had avian influenza in the poultry industry, and we've had porcine epidemic diarrhea. Just for the production scientists in the room to plug your programs, if any of you don't have a biosecurity program on your ranch, call a chicken producer or a pork producer. Let's look at a year ago on the dotted line in terms of chicken prices. We were being supported by a whole range of factors that we did not expect, and look where we are on the blue line today. But, okay? We got so much more competition in the meat case than we had a year ago. It's unbelievable coming from chicken. And chicken exports are way worse than beef exports. Why? Because we had avian influenza in our turkeys and our egg laying. And when countries ban U.S. poultry, they ban everything. So now not only are we producing more chicken, we have to eat it in the U.S., hence the prices. Let's look ahead to production, should that happen. Okay. The dark blue is this year. And the brown is 2017. The point of this is, we've already gone through the big surge in U.S. chicken production happened in 2015. We're not going to get near as big a surge in 16 or 17. In fact, they're losing enough money now that they could pull in their horns a little bit. Again, as we look ahead, we've been through the shock from the poultry sector already occurred in this market in 2015. Well, apparently you have to have a bigger finger than I am. Let's talk about pork. Same story, blue line. A year ago, we were getting lots of help from the pork because they had porcine epidemic diarrhea, and they aren't this year. Same story, though. The big ramp up in U.S. pork production and world pork production happened in 2015 and probably doesn't repeat the rate of growth in 16 or 17. And you'll hear market people say, oh, the amount of pork in the chicken marketplace is going to blow up the beef market. Well, on per capita consumption, we've eaten this much pork in this country many times before, and so it is a factor, but it is not the factor. Anybody want to talk about cattle? Well, I guess I do, so let's move right along here, assuming the clicker will come with me. You all told USDA you're holding back about 6.5% more heifers for beef cow replacements on July 1 than a year ago, and it's growing since then. Look at the historical relationship. We're now at heifer holdback levels that really are a turn in cyclically in the numbers and provide a foundation to grow the herd. Heifer slaughter is still small, the blue line. We're still doing it. Starting to close the gap. Remember the rate of growth we got last year, we're still on track to do that again this year. Cow kill. Get about a 2-year. When you pull back cow kill like we did in recent years to start regrowing the herd, you know, you can't keep doing that forever. We get to normal culling rates again, and we're approaching those levels now. So the beef cow herd, building of the herd. So really, now from this point forward, we're dependent on heifer holdback and turning heifers into cows to continue the rate of expansion in the herd. We're almost past the beef cow influence stage. Let's back up here a little bit. What are the headwinds to growing the herd? Well, there's all kinds. You're in a public land state. You know about public lands. We know about in the Midwest where we took acre after acre out of pasture and range, and not range, hay, and we planted it to corn and soybeans. We know about all these headwinds. But an important headwind to growing the herd is what? Economics. Don't believe these numbers. These are our estimates on cost of production per cow including past your rent, underlined including past your rent. We talked in this industry for years, plus or minus several hundred dollars. It took $350 cash cost plus past your rent to be in this business. Then thanks to ethanol and the run-up in corn prices, that increased all our costs of production, cost $550 a cow to be in this game. What does it take today? It takes about $900 per cow on the cost side. You think that's a headwind to people just jumping? It takes more capital than ever to play this game. Now, the last 2 years, what's gone up in our estimates here? Well, it hasn't been oil and gas costs. Been a little bit of health care costs. Wouldn't want to mention Obamacare or anything like that. It's being recorded. It's past your rent. It's past your rent has gone up dramatically. Part of the game for survival over the next few years is how do I get more value out of my existing resources, because that past your rent has been the surging up cost component that we've had to deal with and will continue to deal with. But again, it takes more capital than ever to play the game. So as we look ahead in this industry, what do we think happens to the herd? Well, the top line in there is our estimated biggest herd growth rate. Bottom line is our smallest herd growth rate. You're early with that 10-minute sign, young lady, just to let you know. Because I've got 42 slides to go. But even in our biggest expansionary rate there, we're going to get back about to the prior peak, maybe a little bit larger. And the bottom line is our lowest expansion rate, and it's probably somewhere in between. So we're on a pretty aggressive expansion of this industry this year and next year. But then it's probably going to slow down to the economic realities, and then you have to build the herd from the heifers. And we've already seen over the last 2 to 3 weeks, you know, these bred heifer prices pull back rather significantly. So this is a cyclical buildup. We're not going to get back to the cattle numbers of several years ago. We don't need to worry about that, but we're certainly in a growth phase. Let's talk about beef production, same as we did earlier. So we had a pretty good ramp up. You look earlier this year on the dark blue line, and beef production was down. It isn't until the fourth quarter of this year, the quarter we're sitting in today, where we're increasing beef production. Guess what? We're doing that's part of the problem that we've got in the market in recent times. But let's look ahead to even the brown bar. In 2017, beef production in the U.S. will be about as big as it was in 2013. 2016, we're going to have year-to-year declines in beef production. So we're ramping up, but we're still trailing 2013 levels. It's apparently a lag here where it wants me to say something intelligent, and it's not working. So these, we talked about costs. Now these bars are net returns, net returns. Well, last year, y'all had a good year. You all had a good year your grandparents and great-grandparents dreamed of. This year, we're going to be way down on this return per cow. It's going to be the second highest ever, even at these fourth quarter prices, okay? The blue line is the inventory. It's off the charts. Looks bad compared to last year. I spent almost all of my career starting at the University of Nebraska in 1983 running around the country and talking to you all and other groups saying that, you know, in this industry, we really don't cover our total economic costs of production. You know, you have to kind of love this game. You got to be able to willing to work for probably less than you can make in Denver. You got to probably take a return on capital that's a little bit less than you can get if you play the stock market. And you got to love it. Last year, this year, next year, we're going to cover our total. You're getting paid as much as professionals like you all are getting paid in Denver. It's about damn time. And the question is, how much are we going to expand this herd, and how is this going to stick? Now let's talk about this unraveling in the marketplace. It was driven by, you know, besides all these factors coming together, niddling away at us, pork and chicken and futures markets and umpteen thousand things, what happened? Well, we've been delaying fed cattle marketings for month after month on the blue line. And you can't keep doing that. And we end up with these steer weights that are humongous, finally come down in the last 2 weeks. We have confirmed reports from packing plants last week of still steers going to packing plants weighing over 1,700 pounds and some nearly touching 2,000 pounds. Folks, those weigh as much as bulls. Today, we take animals to 14. We used to say we took a 750-pound steer to 1,250 pounds and we're going to mark it. Now we take them to 1,650 pounds. You delay marketings long enough in an industry, and then you end up near Thanksgiving where packers don't want to step out, and everybody's all confused, and the markets start coming unraveled, and guess what? You get this type of downward spiral in a market. How long has it lasted? It took about 6 weeks to get to the bottom. Remember that, 6 weeks to get to the bottom. Are we starting to solve the problem? Slowly. Cattle feeders, 2014 was the second best year ever for cattle feeders on our scale. And 2015 will be the worst year ever for cattle feeders. We're still closing out losses of $300 a head out of feedlot closeouts in the last couple weeks. The feedlots have taken it in the shorts. And that's got to get fixed. And it didn't get fixed at all in the fourth quarter of this year. So in this economic environment, let's stand back and see if I can read my thing here. Consumer demand is pretty good, but we don't know what the U.S. economy starts to slow down. You know, beef prices are going to go down. Can't really do anything about that, but it's a question mark. Foreign demand, it's probably going to get better sometime, not quickly, but I can't do anything about it, but it's got a couple question marks. Feedstuffs. We can go up and down in the feedstuffs market. We got to be prepared for it in cow-calf and stocker country. But I can't do a lot about it. But if it starts to happen, we're building cattle numbers, and we have to react quicker than we have in recent years. You know, the cyclical peak in cattle prices was the fourth quarter of 2014. Across the board, that was the top. There's always a top in a market. You know, purebred operations this year are going to have their best year ever. Dairy operations, not so much. Hog operations, not so much. On and on and on. Again, we already talked about the cattle feeder side. So let's talk about this economic environment. Should we go to the next slide? There's only one left. You want to hit that for me? Thank you. So let's talk about this for a minute. Let's talk about planning a little bit. In this economic environment, we've had a heck of a ramp down. Biggest potential drops and price volatility over the next couple of years is probably in that heavyweight yearling category. I'm fighting a downtrending market, and I've got to have a really sharp pencil to make that work. Most of you that ran summer stockers this year, if you look at your estimated cost, you lost money. It's not going to change. That stocker component is the one that ran headlong into the fourth quarter this year, and we're really struggling out there because feedlots can't afford to buy them. Cyclically eroding prices from this point. No more collapses unless something hits us like a 2x4, and it can happen. As you notice early in my presentation, I didn't have to put up a disclaimer saying, don't believe anything I say, read 4 pages of this. I'm not trying to sell you anything. But you're all kind of understand, right? The world changes. We saw some of that this year that we don't expect, so we have to adapt. And this, in the green, expect more normal. I'm stressing here. I put more. We're probably going to see more seasonality in prices than we've seen in the last 5 years. What's the normal seasonality? Fed cattle prices peak in the early spring. Yearlings, nobody ever knows when they're going to peak. And calf prices are lowest in the fall. And they get pressured when you're building a herd more so in the fall because you're getting more numbers every year. So expect more price seasonality. And the last 4 or 5 years of just waiting on the market and having that pay off big time are behind us. And you got to price your calves responsibly. If you have reputation calves, you're going to get bids from feedlots, and you better know what you want to ask for them, because in 3 to 4 weeks, that bid could very well be gone, not to be seen until the next cattle cycle. Hopefully you made some profits and you invested wisely. Cattle feeding has already changed. Those are your customers. Those people aren't the same business as they were 10, 15 years ago. They're feeding individuals. They're sorting. You know, retained ownership. It's a greatly different capital game. You need to understand that your buyer's industry has already changed, and they're doing things quite a bit differently than they ever have. And how do you fit in here? I mean, the best of the cattle are going to get early bids out in the country from the feedlots, and the worst of the cattle ain't going to get no bids at all, and you're going to be taking what you can get. That's the name of the game. The packers have made money and are making more money by moving through the chain towards the consumer and tying up with the big cattle feeders. The cattle feeders are making their money and going to stay in business by trying to tie up the best of the cattle early in the cycle, all the way back to calves. So what does that mean? That means I probably got to get back to the basics and understand how my calves perform. I might want to understand this because that's feedlots already know if you're a reputation or you're a larger producer what your cattle have done. And let's talk about these market downdrafts. These are hard to get through. These ain't no fun. Remember, let's look at back to 9/11. 9/11, we had a downdraft very similar to this, where people like me quit traveling the country and we really blew up the prime beef market, the choice beef market, et cetera, et cetera. We went into a recession. After 9/11, after BSE, we had a similar event. How long does it take once we start to recognize a downward spiral in a market till you hit the bottom? 5, 6, 7, probably no longer than 8 weeks, 2 months, 3 months. So if you're in a feedlot situation retaining ownership, you act early and you don't wait. If you've got yearlings, you act early and don't wait. If you've got calves, you either act early and don't wait, or you have enough feed resources and everything to come out the other side, which is exactly what people did after 9/11, which is exactly what people did after BSE, and is exactly what some people will do today. So you need to understand when you get into an unraveling, kind of almost irrational market, that these things happen and there is a bottom. It's hard to pick the bottom, but if your business plan thinks about it in advance, you'll come out the other side. Thank you very much for the time, and we'll be at the bullpen session.